And now, here's Jeff on the WCHL Afternoon News.
Hey, it's Common Science with Jeff Danner of the Common Science blog on our website, chapelboro.com. It updates every Sunday. He joins us every Monday at 4:30, except this week when I've been running behind because of the forum, so 4:40, but here nonetheless. So good to have you with us.
Happy to be here at any time, Aaron.
All right, so talking about this week's column, and I have to assume it was an awesome weekend because you came in with a column about acid.
I'm missing the reference there. Sometimes
there really
it's too
is
quick
none.
For me.
This
column, so that it has, you know, again, I've been trying to work on my titles. Mm-hmm. I mean, you liked my one the other week about In Which My Chicken Saved My Life.
Yes,
so this one says, the highest volume chemical produced in the world is
...
And that leads into the column. The answer is sulfuric acid.
I had no, like, that is not even, so the highest volume means the
most number
produced.
Most number of tons of the chemical.
That's fascinating.
And it's by a mile. And so let's talk a little bit.
I think you used the phrase sulfuric acid in a landslide, which is never a good thing to experience.
That's a, well said. Well said. If you see a landslide of sulfuric acid coming, run the other way.
Yeah.
Some of these, you know, these ideas from my columns jangle around in my head for a long time, along with a bunch of other irrelevant thoughts and trivia. But this column harkens back to 1991.
Okay.
At that time, I was a graduate student in chemical engineering at the University of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. They asked, would I teach? They had a class called Introduction to Chemical Engineering that they taught to the freshmen, so that they kind of knew what chemical engineering was all about. And
Did they just refer to it as ice, or was that just...
we're chemical engineers. We're not that clever.
Okay, good, good.
And but I think it's an interesting precursor, just personally, here 25 years later, I write a column called Common Science, which explains introductory science things like I taught them, and I go up
and
to Penn State.
And ways that you can understand if you don't really have a background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I'm often thinking we are the person we are, or we have been the person we are for a long time. See, I can't explain that. That's more sociological than
that was my reference from before.
Yeah. And so in the first lecture, I asked the chemical engineering students, you know, what do you think is the highest volume chemical produced in the United States? And they gave some guesses, ammonia and other guesses, but none of them came up with sulfuric acid.
I wouldn't even know where to begin with that, honestly. Ammonia is a good guess because you think, like, cleaning solution, that's kind of everywhere,
That was the sulfuric acid was the correct answer in 1991. Mm-hmm. It's the correct answer today. It was the correct answer in 1891. Since there has been a chemical industry, sulfuric acid has been the highest volume chemical, and we'll talk about why.
Yeah.
But just with the numbers, right now in the United States, we make about 36 million tons of sulfuric acid a year.
Wow.
And then the second most amount is propylene. Mm-hmm. At 14 million. Now, propylene goes into polypropylene, so like many, many things. If you just think plastic.
Okay.
Like
yes.
A plastic toy, most plastics are polypropylene or polyethylene.
Okay.
But by a factor of 3 in terms of tons, we make more sulfuric acid.
So we make more sulfuric acid than the chemical that is an essential component of plastic,
yes.
Which literally everything is made of these days.
Yeah. And
that's fascinating.
That's where people got that wrong. So let's... we'll get back to the uses and the reasons in just a moment, but like I always like to work a little history in my discussions because that's my other passion. And so let's talk about sulfuric acid. We've known about it since long, long ago. Mm-hmm. And people understood it was kind of acidic and had some properties. In fact, the Greeks used to call it vitriol.
Okay.
Right? And so the term,
vitriolic,
very acidic, sort of that's the background.
Yeah.
But it came into commercial production for the first time in 1746. Mm-hmm. There was a guy named John Roebuck in Birmingham, England, and he came up with what's called the lead chamber process to make
of
sulfuric.
Sears and, or is this
a
different guy?
It up.
Okay.
I looked it up because I thought, wow, that would be really another fascinating hook. Actually, no direct relation.
Okay, so not the same guy.
Although this guy had a really interesting career. He invented the sulfuric acid process. He was a co-investor with James Watt on his steam engine company. And then, like lots of inventors, he eventually went broke and died a poor man somewhere near Birmingham.
Every time you start talking about the inventors, I want the want-want trombone just ready to play.
So the lead chamber process is kind of what it sounds like. It's a big lead chamber. Mm-hmm. And what they did, they mined sulfur out of the ground, and they burned it.
Okay.
And that makes sulfur dioxide. and they let that flow into this lead chamber, and they also put in steam, and then I'll leave out some of the other components, but some chemistry occurs, and then when the steam condenses, you're left with a liquid sulfuric acid solution.
Okay.
And the reason, of course, that the chamber is lined with lead is otherwise the sulfuric acid would just eat through.
Whatever,
that's what they had. And I think, you know, it's interesting, if you think about that process, that's exactly how acid rain forms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, typically when we get acid rain, coal has some sulfur in it, and that's the primary origin of acid rain. And so that sulfur burns in the coal, and if we don't prevent it from coming out the smokestacks, you get sulfur dioxide gas in the air. It combines with little droplets of water,
mm-hmm.
And then eventually falls as acid rain.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know if it, to me, I mean, that's a pretty old school kind of process.
Yes.
I mean, you think about the fact we're just burning some sulfur, adding some steam, putting in this lead lined chamber.
And for 1746, you would kind of expect it to be an old school process.
Yeah,
is it basically the same today?
Almost.
Interesting.
Until almost 1950, that was still the primary mode of making sulfuric acid.
Mm-hmm.
And there are still, I mean, there are many other technologies that are advanced. But for 200 years, and bear in mind, this is not, and during that time, it was the most produced chemical in the entire chemical industry. So the other thing that inspired me to write this column was an experience I had in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And I write more about it in the column. We won't have enough time here. But at that time, I was working on a project in a chemical plant in what was then Czechoslovakia, now Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a town called Ústí, which was a big town in the Bohemia section of the Czech Republic back in the day.
Okay.
And the plant that I was working at had been opened in 1856. And it was about the size of a small town.
Wow.
And I'm working on one part of it with this sort of gleaming, shiny, new, state-of-the-art 2004 technology. And there were all these old buildings, and I was there for some time. And one time I asked, can I get a tour?
Right.
So one
right.
afternoon we went walking around, and we came into this building, and there, no joke, are 10 lined up together lead chamber processes making sulfuric acid the same way that John Roebuck made it in
That's
1756.
Awesome. And this was 2004.
This is 2004.
Wow. I mean, Can you imagine the tourist board in Ústí? Like, Czech Lori Policelli is like, well, everyone comes to tour our sulfuric acid factory. It's a vital component of the economy.
And as I say in the column, it felt like I was walking through like one of those time portals or a time machine.
Yeah.
You see in a science fiction movie, and I thought, there's a great engineering joke here, right? as an engineer, like, you know, when do you want to go back in history? And you think of all these great times, he said, well, can I go back to 1746 when John Roebuck invents the lead chamber process? Anyway.
You might be first on the list. I mean,
So,
people want to go back to like the signing of the Declaration of Independence, but the line to do that is so long. You can go back to 1746 like that.
There you go.
Yeah.
See? All right. So like I say in the column, and I say here, but I digress.
Yes.
So let's talk about why do we make so much sulfuric acid?
Yeah, because I would never have thought.
Okay. So two-thirds of it is used in the same process.
Mm.
One of the main components of fertilizer is phosphorus, and we get phosphorus just like sulfur. We mine rock out of the ground that contains phosphorus in it, but the phosphorus in the rock isn't at the right chemical form to use for fertilizer.
Okay.
So about two-thirds of all sulfuric acid is used to dissolve that rock that has the phosphorus in it.
Okay.
And when it dissolves the rock, it now forms phosphoric acid.
There we go.
You know, sometimes it's hard to pronounce things on live radio. You form phosphoric acid.
You did pretty good
acid.
With poly, I don't even know, the plastic thing.
Oh, polypropylene?
That one, yeah.
So you form phosphoric acid, and from that, that's the raw material for all of the phosphorus-containing fertilizer around the world.
So sulfuric acid is used to produce fertilizer?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, two-thirds of it. And it's a good reminder of still how much of the global economy and activity is all still based on food.
Agriculture, yeah.
So about two-thirds of it to make fertilizer.
Okay.
And then...
And that covers the difference between that and propylene, right?
Pretty close.
Close to it.
Close to it, yeah. And so then the other big use, if you remember high school chemistry, and again, I refuse to accept that people graduate high school without having had chemistry.
Yes. We'll say that's true.
You remember many chemical reactions will occur either more quickly or more completely if the atmosphere or the environment they're reacting in is acidic.
Okay,
that's a very common chemical technique. Mm-hmm. Well, sulfuric acid has the two benefits of being quite strong as an acid, but also since we make so much of it, it's also very cheap.
Okay.
So very, very many processes out there in the world that need an acidic environment. Like, for example, like a big use is in making paper.
Okay.
So a paper mill uses lots and lots of sulfuric acid.
That's interesting. So because we use it to make fertilizer, we also, because of economy of scale,
sure, economy
now we use
scale,
it to make these other things.
It's
yeah.
just a good, cheap industrial acid. And then another area that actually that John Roebuck was involved in as well, and probably what helped motivate him to invent the process, is the last step of producing a component that's made of iron or steel. There's almost always some rust, and so sulfuric acid is good at stripping the rust off to make a nice shiny iron or metal product.
Is that what we use for like? Oh, now I'm blanking on the word. Commercial, that's the word. Commercial rust removers?
No,
is that something else?
It would only, that would be too dangerous of a material for personal use. So there are other ways of removing rust.
But
in an industrial setting, and it does a very complete job.
Okay, awesome.
So I thought that's a really, it's interesting to me, again, that this, you know, we're making all this material that's really, this is some pretty low-tech stuff. Mm-hmm. Fertilizer, paper, making iron parts. And so I thought, well, do I have a couple more minutes?
We got a couple more minutes. Yeah.
Let me harken back. I also asked the students back in 1991 to name the other top 10 chemicals. So they're all still pretty much the same. And I won't, read them all to you. But there, we talked about propylene is number two to make plastics. The next three and four are sodium hydroxide. That's a base.
Yes.
Right? So that's popular for the same reasons that acid is. There are chemical reactions that occur more quickly or more completely in a basic environment. And so that's the cheap industrial base.
And that goes into soap.
It goes into soap and many other processes. Next is sodium carbonate. That's used primarily in the manufacture of glass and brick. The next is ammonia. And ammonia is the, in fertilizer, you want phosphorus and nitrogen. Well, ammonia is part of the
nitrogen.
The nitrogen source for fertilizer.
Okay.
Then you get into benzene, and you think, good God, why are we producing millions of tons of benzene? It's a carcinogen.
Yes.
But it's within the same chemical plant, it's converted into other chemicals. Mm-hmm. So in particular, most of the benzene is used to make styrene. And then, we're familiar with all sorts of polystyrene, styrofoam, those kind of plastics.
Okay.
And so the rest of the list is there in the column, if listeners want to go read. But again, here's the story. These are really old school chemicals. Mm-hmm. Like you think of a chemical plant from the 1950s in your mind, and this is probably what you're thinking of. And you think, well, here's this modern world that we have and all these high-tech devices. And you'll read all the time that, manufacturing in the United States is down, which it is.
Yeah.
But the chemical industry in the United States is big. We make $800 billion a year worth of chemicals in the United States, which kind of, I think about that number, I think that, well, that helps justify writing a weekly column about chemistry and chemical engineering. But, we're the largest in the world. It's still contributing quite a bit to the economy. And I think it's just an interesting perspective that there's still a lot going on in these kind of old school things. And I guess now that I'm an old man in my 50s, I feel kind of comforted by that.
All right. Well, it's a fascinating column, so check it out. It's up on the website, champelburr.com, right now, right there on the homepage. So click on it and read it. Jeff, we've got to wrap it up now because we're still a little bit behind, but what's on tap for next week?
So I've got too much on the personal travel schedule, so I'm taking one of my rare weeks off. So I'll be back in 2 weeks with some as yet to be determined topic.
All right, sounds good. Common Science with Jeff Danner. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.